The topic this afternoon is going to begin with parental rights in our schools and social system, then follow up with sources of advice and information. I'd like to divide it into those three areas and begin with our parental rights in our schools. Now, there may be some wisdom in having somebody that's had experience with schools, or maybe not. We'll see. But I was talking to Dee Dee during lunch, and I figured that out of the 47 years I've been alive on this earth, 41 of them have been related to being in school somehow or another. Either in grade school, middle school, high school, college, or teaching, which is what I have done for several years. It's amazing that that's probably one of the jobs that we know the most about, or at least we think we know the most about, because we've all experienced teaching or education in some respect firsthand by being in school ourselves. But there's so much more to it, to the idea of a school system and the structure of the school system, the laws that go into governing the school system. And I'd like to just begin by doing a brief overview of that structure. Our public education system really began years and years ago as a result of people knowing that there was a need, or feeling like there was a need, for citizens of our country to be educated. Back in the colonial times, education was primarily for religious purposes. Learning to read the Bible was right up on the top of the list for parents and community members to have their children know how to read the Bible. And the purpose was so that the people were not susceptible to satanic influences. Well, in the early Republic, after the United States was formed, some of our founding fathers wrote that it was necessary to educate the voters. The voters needed to maintain this democratic society. Many of the founding fathers have written, made comments, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, a few that I had read in preparation for this, both cited the need for an educated public. In the 1800s, most of the states by that time had passed their first enforceable compulsory education laws. Up until that point, education was up to the parents to decide where and when. The communities, most often, through either public or private funds, would produce a school, and students were sent to those schools. In the 1800s, most of the states, by this time, had a public education system in place and were requiring students to attend. And one of the reasons why that I ran across was that this was not only a way to promote democracy, but to protect children and adult jobs by limiting the labor pool. So we see that the purpose for education, the initiative for education, changes through the years somewhat. More recently, if you were to ask educators, or if you were to ask policymakers why education is necessary, you're going to get an answer that's much more geared toward the good of the individual and a need of that individual to be able to fit within the society. Also, you're going to get an answer that says that the individual needs to be able to be an active or a valid part of the economy. So through the years, we see a shift from the needs of religious understanding, economic reasons, political reasons, to much more of a focus on individuals. The state has and probably always will have a vested interest in educating its citizens. It just makes sense that we need to have people that know how to participate in the world economy if we want to have a standard of living in the state in which we reside. So the state has this reason or this need to have citizens educated, and the state is the primary authority over public schools. So if you were to look at a diagram of who's in charge of public schools, you would see at the very top the state of Missouri. Then underneath the state of Missouri, you would see the state school board. And you would see the commissioner of education. And then under that, you would see local school boards. And you would see local superintendents. And under them, the building principals. Absent from that hierarchy would be the federal government. And much to the surprise of many, myself included, when I did this preparation, the federal government has very little authority over the public school system. Now, there are those in the federal government and policymakers that are trying to increase that influence more and more. It was not until 1980 that we had a Department of Education at the federal level. And right after it was developed and instituted, President Reagan, one of his promises was that he was going to do away with it before the end of his term. He wasn't able to accomplish that. But there is a struggle of power, of authority, over who's going to control schools. And there are many who wish the federal government had their hands in public education more of a stranglehold than what they would have now. How the federal government directs or influences education is through the purse strings. Unfortunately, at least in my opinion, we send a good deal of our taxes to the federal government, who then hires people to tell us how we should use the money, and we have to then hire people at the local area to write grants to be able to get the money back and follow all the rules. So we're beholden many times in our public school systems at the local level to the federal government, not because they're telling us what we have to do, it's because we want our money back to use to do what we want to do. Unfortunately, there are lots of strings attached. So the federal government does have a lot of influence, but it's not a direct authority. Another way that the federal government has influence is through monitoring agencies such as the OCR, the Office of Civil Rights. The Office of Civil Rights is a part of or a branch of the Department of Education. Their main goal or their main focus is to make sure that all citizens have opportunity for a public education. There's a phrase that's used, the free and appropriate public education. And that's their goal. Many lawsuits, many hours and attorney fees are spent each year because of complaints that are brought to the federal level over the way things are handled in a local school district. But it's still the state that has that responsibility to oversee it. We're going to talk a little bit about those rights, because I think that bears directly on our topic here. After we get past the state level, then we're taking a look at the local control over the school, the public schools. And the local control is mainly executed through the local school board. There are other influences, however. If you look at the county government has very little to do with a school district, even one that's within its own borders. The main way in which a county government is going to influence a school district is through tax collection, through perhaps some laws that would monitor the use of some of those taxes, but mainly the county government is going to simply collect taxes and move those right on over to the school district for use. The county may fund local initiatives separately. For instance, in Jackson County, Missouri, where we reside, there is a special sales tax that is exacted from every transaction in Jackson County, and that is used to fight drugs. So we call it the Jackson County drug tax. And that money is collected by the county, and it's funneled to the public school district for certain initiatives that the county has an interest in supporting. And so we do receive money from the county, but normally it's very minimal compared to the state funding and then federal funding through those grants. Law enforcement agents from the county are often available for use in the schools if needed. The sheriff's office, I know in our own school district, the sheriff's office will come in and will help with student disturbances if there's anything like that that needs law enforcement support. They'll also bring in their drug dogs and do scans through the building. So there's a cooperation between the county and the school, but not a real position of authority that the county would have. One might also think that the city would have a role in a public school that's within that city, but again, it's very minimal. Very minimal direction that the city would have or influence on the school. Again, it could be through collecting taxes that are used for the school. Business alliances, such as the Chamber of Commerce, are very interested in a public school being successful, because the more successful the school is, the more people want to move to the area, the better the economy will be. So there's this relationship between the city and the school, but it's not one of authority necessarily. Often the city will share facilities. Maybe they'll build a park right next to a school so that the school can use its facilities, or a swimming pool or something like that that the school wouldn't normally be able to afford. The city might do that. The city would also share its police and its fire department to help with the needs of the school. But by and large, the city's not going to have much influence or authority on the way the school is run. So that brings us down to the role of the local school district. Now again, remember, the federal government has its influence mainly over the way in which money is spent and through some of the civil rights that we're going to talk about here in a moment. The state is the one that's in charge of the school district. The local school district, its Board of Education, is an agent of the state. So rather than thinking of the school district being as this little autonomous thing that's out here by itself, and if you want to direct what goes on in the school district, it's just the school board that makes that decision, that would not be true. The state of Missouri, through legislation and then through its acting agents of the state school board and the commissioner of education, is the chain of authority there in running a school. The school board, the local school board, then will hire a superintendent. The superintendent is the administrator for the policies of the local school board. They're the ones in charge of the day-to-day running operation, the direction of how that school district is run, knowing that they have to follow all of the laws, the regulations, the rules that are set forth not only by their own school board, but by the state as well. Underneath the superintendent, there will be other, depending on the size of the district, there'll be other school officials, deputy superintendents, directors of this or that. But the next significant level of authority is going to come at the building level in the form of a principal. The principal teacher is how that phrase began and just was shortened to principal. The principal is in charge of the day-to-day operations, the curriculum, the discipline within that particular building. And they may also delegate some of that to assistant principals, but the principal is one that's going to be responsible for a particular school, a particular location. Now, other people that are delegated or have delegated responsibilities, obviously in the school, are going to be wide-ranging. The teacher is going to be under the direction of the principal and responsible for all of the students that come there to their classroom, and other supervisory duties that the principal may assign to them. There's high school counselors, there's other school personnel, you have nurses, you have bus drivers, you have cafeteria workers, you have custodians, you have maintenance workers, you have paraprofessionals, you have hall monitors, supervisors, the list goes on and on, depending on the size of the district. So, hopefully that'll give you an idea of the chain of authority or command that really is involved in a public school system. Now, I spent some time to do that so that we could get an understanding that when we go to a public school, we are really going to an agent of the state, an agent of the government. This is not just simply our neighbors that hired somebody to teach our child. This is an arm or an extension of the state government. So as a Christian, how do we look upon this institution of public education? Well, I think when we start thinking about our rights or we think about our privileges, two different things, by the way, and the way that we interact with this, we need to think of it in terms of it being a government agent rather than somebody that we hired to teach our kids. When we go to the Bible and we look at the way in which God wants us to interact with the government, I think that's the model that we want to follow when we think about interacting with the public school system. Okay, in the state of Missouri, I wanted to read just a paragraph here from the Missouri Revised Statutes, Chapter 167, Section 167.031, in case you're taking notes. School attendance is compulsory. And let me read this definition. Every parent, guardian, or other person in this state having charge, control, or custody of a child not enrolled in a public, private, parochial, parish school, or full-time equivalent attendance in a combination of such schools and between the ages of 7 and the compulsory attendance age for the district is responsible for enrolling the child in a program of academic instruction which complies with subsection 2 of this section. Any parent, guardian, or other person who enrolls a child between the ages of 5 and 7 years in a public school program of academic instruction shall cause such child to attend the academic program on a regular basis, according to this section. Non-attendance by such child shall cause such parent, guardian, or other responsible person to be in violation of the provisions of section 167.061, except as provided by this section. So the first part of this says the government is telling us we need to educate our children. That's the law. Now, that is a responsibility that God has given us long before the invention of a public school. So this really isn't anything new, that we have a responsibility to educate our children. But now we see, because the state has a vested interest in our children learning, that the state has also given a parent the responsibility to educate their children. Okay. Now, does it have to be in a public school? Absolutely not. And I will tell you right up front, even though I have been a part of and have been passionate for, in many ways, a good public school education, I am in no way advocating either a homeschool or a public education for your child. So as we go through this, I would want that to be clear. This is going to be a decision you make, and you're going to see in just a moment from another section that I read here that the state of Missouri gives you the right, as a parent, to choose how you want to educate. The responsibility has been given you to educate, but you've been given the right to choose by the state how you do that. Flip to the right page here. Nothing in this section shall require a private, parochial, parish, or homeschool to include in its curriculum any concept, topic, or practice in conflict with the school's religious doctrines, or to exclude from its curriculum any concept, topic, or practice consistent with the school's religious doctrines. Any other provision of the law, to the contrary, notwithstanding, all departments or agencies of the state of Missouri shall be prohibited from dictating through rule, regulation, or other device any statewide curriculum for private, parochial, parish, or home schools. In other words, written into the law is the state of Missouri, or any part, any agency, any official from the state of Missouri, does not have the right to tell you what you teach your children. There you go. So God gives us a responsibility. The state gives us a responsibility. But the state also, because we are very blessed to live in this kind of country, have the right to teach whatever we wish to our children, and it fulfills this responsibility that the state gives us. Now, what do we do on a practical level if we decide that we do not want to have our children in a public school system? We obviously have the right to do that. We can homeschool, we can go to private school, there's many different ways to do it. But how do we keep in compliance with the law? How do we, as a Christian, obey the law as far as God allows us to do, and still keep our responsibility if we're not going to go to the public school? How do we do that? The public school system is charged with keeping track of the students that are within its boundaries. So, if I were in the Brookfield School District, if I lived in the Brookfield School District and I had children there, but I didn't send my children to the Brookfield schools, the Brookfield School District, somebody in that central office area is going to be responsible for knowing what's happening to my child. Now that may sound a little strange, but there's a really easy way outlined in the law that allows you to do that and still, without causing a problem for the school officials and without defying the law, the way that's done is to simply write a letter to the school district. So I, as a parent, would write this letter to the school district giving my child's name and age and indicating that I was going to be homeschooling my child. That's it. All I have to do is notify. Now, if any of my neighbors happened to be a little extra nosy, and they were noticing that my children were home during the day, and happened to call one of the school officials and say, did you know that Gerald Clevenger's kid's running around through the yard all day long and not going to school? It would be very easy for them to say, Gerald Clevenger has already filed the official paperwork. He's homeschooling. There is absolutely no violation of the law. That's it. So it's a very simple and practical way to comply with the state law, but do what you believe is right as a parent, if that's what you choose to do. Okay, let me pause there for a moment before we get into these other rights that the federal government has, and see if you have any questions over that. Yes, ma'am.
What year statutes are you quoting from?
The one that I had here was marked August 28th, 2006.
When was a truant officer done away with?
A truant officer in the state of Missouri has been a part of the court system, if I remember right. And
he was the one that kept track of the kids who were not in school.
Mm-hmm.
That the superintendent reported that they were not in school.
That's right. And it was to the court. Or he was a function of the court system. Right. And to my knowledge, that it hasn't been done away with, but it's been drastically reduced in their ability to follow through. We've had deputy juvenile officers from the county come to our school and talk to us about children that have not been in attendance. Now, unless something's changed since I'm aware of that, there still is that function out there, but in practicality, what I find is that it's not very likely that if the student is older, let's say 14, 15 years old, there's going to be much follow-through unless the student is in the juvenile court system for violation of some kind. Okay, other questions? The role of the federal government and how it influences our schools certainly can cause a lot of controversy, and I think in some cases for good reason. As I mentioned earlier, the Department of Education was created in 1980, and it was combining several offices together, several federal agencies together, and this is their stated purpose. It was to establish policies on federal financial aid for education and distributing, as well as monitoring those funds. In other words, they want to hold the purse strings, collecting data on American schools and disseminating research. They want to keep track. They want to keep a pulse on what's happening in public schools. They want to focus national attention on key educational issues. In other words, they want to politicize some issues, and the prohibiting discrimination and ensuring equal access to education. That last phrase there is the one that where I believe they probably exert the most influence, that and the money that is sent from the federal government. There are two laws that the Office of Civil Rights, which is a function of the Department of Education at the federal level, used to influence education in the public school system. One of those is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, and it primarily deals with students who have some sort of a disability It can be a learning disability or a physical handicap of some kind. And normally the ones that are the most pronounced are easily identifiable. There's also another law. It was a part of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, Section 504. If you've been in the public school systems before, you probably heard the term 504 plan. This is a lot more vague, and parents can access special accommodations for their students if they can identify some sort, and the phrasing is as vague as saying a perceived disability, where there's maybe necessarily not any obvious disability, a perceived disability, then accommodations will be made for those students. Now, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time with this unless there's questions on it, but the public school system does have to comply with these federal laws, and the Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights, is the one who comes in and oversees this if there's a question on compliance. A lot of time and effort is spent in the public schools with children that have a disability or a perceived disability, as the 504 would outline, in writing up plans and accommodating the education of children in this case. If there is a complaint that is validated, this is a big deal to a school district, because the school district is going to risk losing all of their federal funds if it's found that they're not in compliance with these laws regarding the 504 or the IDA law. What happens in effect is there's a threat that's given to the school district that these funds will be taken away unless something very quickly and obvious happens to be in compliance with those guidelines. So needless to say, that puts a little fear in the officials at the school district level, if that's something that's going to happen.